Welcome to Peak to Pit, Ally Peak, TJ Pittenger. It's been a couple weeks. We've been busy. We've had some stuff going on, but we are back and excited to talk sports with you. But TJ, let's catch up a little bit first. It's been a while. We went from like doing a show every single week, talking to each other every minute. The last couple weeks has been like a little crazy for us.
Yeah, there have been birthdays, there have been weddings, there have been vacations. It's been wild in both of our houses. And so much like the NCAA, we had a dead period. We had a 3-week break, dead period over here. So also like there wasn't a lot going on. Obviously nothing going on in college football. We finally have some news this week to talk about. Nothing going on in college football. You know, you can only say so much about, you know, your hockey team that just dominates every single team that they play and is about to go back to back. And so we took some time off. I would say we enjoyed some. Well, I enjoyed my time, but I mean, I just, you know, we've been crazy busy enjoying our time, I guess is the better way to say it. We, there was a week where, I mean, it was guys week here one week in this house where Bryant's birthday party was on a Saturday, I think. My birthday was the next day. And then we had Bryant's birthday was just 3 or 4 days later. And then Father's Day was that next
Sunday. It was your week. It was the one. I feel like it's always your week in your house. Your wife is a saint.
I feel like it's opposite. Like it was the one week out of 52 that we celebrated the guys in this house instead of the girls for 51 weeks. So things have returned. The balance of power has returned. Like we are celebrating the girls once again and will for the next, you know, roughly 49 weeks until the middle of June next year. You guys went on vacation. You went out of town. Tell us about that.
We did. We went to Highlands, North Carolina, Highlands and Cashers area, which is like Northwest Carolina mountains. I have a old family friend that was getting married. Hadley and Hayden were the flower girls in her wedding. There was like a lot of pressure. My kids have been in 4 weddings, right? So it's not like they haven't done this before. But this wedding was, the altar was on a 45-degree angle, up stone steps into the side of a mountain. Hadley and Hayden had to first walk up those stairs and drop rose petals everywhere, which, right, standard flower girl stuff, but not used to doing it on an angle. Then they had to run down the side of the hill, which did not have steps on the side, try not to eat it in their little flower girl dresses, and come back around to the end of the wedding party and pick up the bride's veil. And then each one of them had to hold a corner of the veil and carry it far enough away from her that it didn't drag on the ground or touch the stone steps, but close enough that it didn't pull out of her head while they were walking up this 45-degree angle. I was stressing because, you know, one step too far pulls out of her head, one step too close, they trip over it. So I was stressing. And then when the wedding was over, they also had to stand up there with the groomsmen and bridesmaids, which has not been the case in every other wedding they've been in. Every other wedding they've been in has been a full Catholic mass. So they sent the flower girls to like sit with their parents during the service, which I kind of prefer because 12 minutes or 20 minutes or 40 minutes, however long the ceremony is going to be, of Hadley and Hayden on display is not my favorite 20 minutes. Because you never know what they're going to do up there left to their own devices. But so they were up there the whole time. They were pretty good. A wasp kept flying around Hayden. So she did kept kind of like swatting the air, like kind of like ninja, like, which was pretty amusing. And then as soon as the bride and groom were married, they had to pick the veil back up and then follow them down the mountain, which was also terrifying. They were also the only children at this wedding at all, but they were good. They had a lot of fun. They cut the rug. Hayden slept till 9:30 the next morning. I think she danced with every person at this wedding. It was good. And then after that, we had booked a house in Lake Glenville, which Highlands and Cashers, Glenville is all like right up there in this same area that we love to visit. And so anyway, we got a house just off the lake. So on one side, our views were the lake. The other side, our views were the mountain range. And we just did a ton of hiking and swimming. And we went gem mining. The girls each found some cool gems. So they each got to pick one to turn into a ring. It was just really fun. And there's something about like watching your kids dig up earthworms and then fish with them and watching them, you know, hike up the side of a mountain when they're a little scared, but like you know, they know they can do it, or go down Sliding Rock or swim underneath the waterfall when it's 45 degrees coming out or whatever, that is just like different than what we do in our everyday life. And it is so much fun.
Yeah, no, for sure. We, it's good to break away and do, like you just said, different stuff. Like yeah. This isn't like super wild or anything. I mean, certainly not like climbing up mountains and stuff like you guys are doing, but we also have littler kids.
Your oldest child is younger than our oldest child. So you're not to the point where it's even worth doing this stuff yet.
Taking those trips. They don't remember.
We wouldn't be taking Alexandra and Emerson if we weren't taking Hadley and Hayden.
But we set up a little like small splash pad in the front yard last week, and Elena just begged to go out there every day and play with it. So like, we have a big dead patch now because it literally sat out there all week because we were like, well, I'm not putting it up if she's going to.
We definitely have that in our, in our backyard too.
But yeah, no, just something different. Like last night it was pouring raining and Elena was like, I want to go look at the rain. And so I literally it was right before their bath. So I literally just walked out in the rain with her. And she was dying laughing and we were just spinning around. I was like, okay, let's go in before we get sick again. Just go have fun.
It's so fun to see. They're out of their comfort zone. There's something really neat about that. Some of my best memories from growing up are, you know, things like that, moments like that. So I love doing those things with my children.
Yeah, for sure. All right, so jumping into, we said it's some NCAA news. Nothing, like I feel like our country right now is so divided. Nobody can agree with anybody on anything. Everything is so political. And the way that, you know, even in Congress, the way that votes happen right now, there are 50, you know, Republican senators and 50 Democratic senators. So every vote, splits 50-50 right now. The only thing that people in this country can agree on is that the NCAA is a corrupt organization, right?
Right.
And so like all 9 Supreme Court justices, conservative.
Which, how often do we get all 9 voting the same way? I feel like not that often.
Well, yeah, because usually things wouldn't make it up
something that obvious wouldn't make it that far. Right.
You know, like, isn't going to go that high. And so there would be some interpretation like, oh, I read this way, you read this way. You're going to split 5-4, you're going to split 6-3, or even like 7, you know, a lot of times it is split down, you know, kind of
political, right? Which we wish it wouldn't because that's not what it's supposed to be.
But the only thing that this country can agree on is that the NCAA is a corrupt organization that needs to be humbled and is about to be, you know, and will something happen tonight that'll change the landscape of college football forever. But, in a 9-0 decision, the Supreme Court of the United States ruled against the NCAA, saying that basically, that they were corrupt. I mean, I don't know any other way to say
that. So this argument was just based on education-related benefits. And so it didn't really get into the definition of that, but I think that would be tutoring help. That would be books. That would, I would assume, be room and board as well, but I don't really know exactly how they're defining that. But this was a very narrow lawsuit. But one of the things that Justice Kavanaugh said that I think is probably a precursor, it may honestly even be like virtue signaling to some other people to go ahead and bring this to the Supreme Court. He said, this is a quote, "Nowhere else in America can businesses get away with agreeing not to pay their workers a fair market rate on the theory that their product is defined by not paying their workers a fair market rate. The NCAA is not above the law." And what he's talking about in that is that the NCAA's argument was that these athletes being amateurs is what differentiates college athletics from professional athletics. It's what makes the product different, right? But there's absolutely a way to be an amateur athlete and still get what you are worth, if that makes sense, or at the very least be paid what you deserve. I don't even know if paid what you're worth is the right way to phrase that, but paid what you, something that's fair. You're giving your body to this university, to the sport. You are getting a degree, but there's a lot of cost that comes with that. And so making sure that you can, you know, pay your medical bills when you have to have three knee replacements when you retire or graduate or whatever is not that huge of an ask. But it's interesting.
Yeah. Another quote, the NCAA couches arguments for not paying student athletes in innocuous labels, but the labels cannot disguise the reality. The NCAA's business model would be flatly illegal in almost any other industry in America.
Right.
And we talked about this before the show. We talked, they basically say we don't pay them because they're amateurs. Or we don't
pay, and they're amateurs because we don't pay them.
Right. Like it was like very circular, very mm-hmm. you know, that's what makes, and oh, we don't pay them because they're amateurs, and them being amateurs
is because we don't pay them.
Yeah, is the basis for our model, right? Like we you know, it's what it's what makes our product like, so great. Yeah. Right. It's like saying we don't pay our dish boy because we want him to, it's just stupid, right? Like we want him to work.
We didn't pay our slaves because if we did, they'd be workers and not slaves.
Right, yeah.
And that's a really ridiculous argument. Interestingly, I did read that the plaintiffs essentially had the option to argue a broader challenge and chose to do a very narrow scope on purpose, basically, because they wanted to get away with a win as opposed to attacking a larger view without kind of knowing where the Supreme Court stood on any of this. So it should make it easier for more cases to come down the road because they've taken the temperature of the Supreme Court. They know where they stand on this and they know now how to tailor their arguments to something that's going to appeal to them. Whereas beforehand, I don't think any of us knew what the Supreme Court thought about any of this. It's not common for you know, a lawsuit involving the NCAA or college athletics to make its way to the Supreme Court. That is not a regular occurrence. So instead of taking a loss on broader issues, they wanted the small win so that they could then build the case going forward, which honestly is smart. You know, I said a minute ago, we were talking about that there's not really a definition of education-related benefits. So it's really ambiguous, right? And so now we're going to come into the issues of who's to say what an athlete needs for their education, right? Do they need a $2,000 computer? Do they need a $10,000 computer? Do they, you know, do they need a $1,000 video monitor to stream lectures? Do they need a $5,000 internship or a $15,000 internship? Like somewhere in there, I think that the court did talk about what they refer to as a no Lamborghini rule, which basically is, you don't need to be having this excess money that can be thrown around to buy expensive cars or, you know, houses or things like that. But there's a big difference between like amazing education related benefits and cars, right? So there's going to be a lot of discussion in the coming days and weeks and months about how we define what an education-related expense or benefit is and what we decide is good enough.
It's also interesting to kind of wonder and be curious around the fact of will this may not have anything to do with this, but I mean, it feels like it does to me. So I'll get your take. It'll be interesting to see how the NCAA starts treating teams differently, maybe. Maybe that's something that could end up kind of all tying into this. We talk about education-related expenses, and so you immediately think about tuition. You think about potentially room and board. You think about for the athletes, the weight rooms and the access to the trainers and different things that they have like that. Well, we've seen over the last several months the NCAA continue to just get egg on their face time and time again with regards to female sports, right? We saw the way that the NCAA women's tournament differed from what was happening with the men's tournament with regards to food and weight rooms. We saw that in the women's golf regional, the course was soggy. And so they basically just said like, we're going to scrap this and not even play it. I mean, they never would have done that in men's golf, that women's softball, they had a team playing at midnight. Again, not something that, you know, a lot of outcry over that. Obviously, it was Florida State, but a lot of outcry from all of the coaches, not just FSU or Oklahoma State's coaches, but all of the coaches in how wrong that was. And the list goes on and on, right? Like, I'm not going to go, you know, there's more. And obviously, you know, we see them, we know about them. But if you're given, you know, how does that change? How does the NCAA or how does the Supreme Court or just whoever would hear a case later, you know, jump in on all of that?
And here's the sad thing. The NCAA is motivated by only two things, right? Lawsuits and legislation.
I thought you were going to say money.
Well, yeah. I mean, they're motivated by money as well, but they're only motivated to change based on lawsuits and legislation, right? Like I cannot recall a single time the NCAA made a change that benefited student athletes on their own without essentially having their hand forced. So this is no different.
So Title IX is only the only people that are held to the Title IX standards are universities, correct? Like the NCAA does not. So the Florida State University, Florida, Miami, all these schools.
Now, the funny thing is that the NCAA holds them to these Title IX things, but not themselves.
Right. So Florida State couldn't just say like, oh, well, you're a male football player. Like, yeah, you get this locker or you get this weight room and, you know. So anyway, what we've seen at these different events has just been absurd. So anyway.
Yeah. I mean, it is incredibly disheartening to know that the people in charge that want to preach equality, on a lot of different fronts are so unwilling to hold themselves to the same standard, but here we are. So, we did talk off air a tiny bit about name, image, and likeness, which becomes a thing basically tonight at midnight, right?
Yeah. Go ahead. Sorry.
So there, I was going to say there is actually a hearing that is coming up, a court case against the NCAA where the plaintiffs are requesting that the NCAA not be allowed to have name, image, and likeness restrictions on athletes at all. The NCAA made a motion to dismiss the case. That was denied. So this will continue to move through the court system. But I'll be interested to see if this also ends up at the Supreme Court, because given the statements from Kavanaugh, Gorsuch had a few things to say. Obviously, they voted 9-0. You would think that wouldn't bode well for the NCAA.
I mean, you would hope not, right? And I've talked to a lot of people about this, and it's very difficult, obviously, to get into, but obviously some things are changing with it. But, you know, these colleges and these universities and the NCAA make a lot of money on the backs of these players and stuff. And so, you know, I think it's going to have some positive effects for some people and some negative effects for some others, they're making money on the backs of a lot of, and I mean, I'll just
you
be
and
very
I have
transparent,
talked about,
like, you know, football, slight basketball, maybe a little baseball, and that's about it, right? Like there's not
football,
you know,
a lot of schools, basketball, some schools, and baseball, very
couple,
few schools.
Right.
Right.
Nothing like else. There are one-offs here and there, but essentially nothing else in the country makes money, right?
Correct.
Like everything else operates at a loss. And a lot of those basketball and baseball operate at losses too.
That has long been the argument of why we couldn't pay student athletes, because universities as a whole couldn't afford to do it, because most athletic programs at best break even. There obviously are some that make money overall, but the vast majority break even or even lose money and then are subsidized by their university, their athletic department is, every single year because of the large number of non-revenue generating sports that there are. So the argument has always been most universities cannot afford to pay their athletes. Now, if the money came from the NCAA, which is the logical next step, right? They could afford to do it. The interesting thing about the name, image, and likeness to me that, and you and I have discussed this ad nauseum, but I don't really honestly think that this is going to help a whole lot of people, right? There's not actually that many athletes on any given team that are going to make any real amount of money off of their name, image, and likeness. Like think about every year college football season, you can think of a handful of players who will probably make great money because people might be interested in national commercials or product endorsements, sponsorships, things like that. Then you get to your college towns and there's maybe, let's say, 10 or 15 guys on a team that could get money you know, promoting local car dealerships, local restaurants, bars, you know, things like that. But as a whole, the average athlete in college is not particularly marketable.
Yeah. Right? I mean, I think what it so does
this is not improving the conditions overall for these athletes.
Yeah. I think I follow your logic. I think there are more people that are going to get some benefit of this. I lean a little farther that like more, I think more than you think will, and it won't be like substantial money,
but it'll be like a bar being like, hey, you 20 show up, we'll pay you each $200 to be here, to sit in VIP and drink for free so that people want to come here. It's going to end up being really small blips on the radar for the most part. Now, that doesn't mean that that extra $200 might not benefit that player.
Now, if they do,
but you know, it's not going to be car money or you know, house money or things that I think that some people are kind of picturing in their head.
But I think for a college kid that's like not necessarily going to, you know, your Trevor Lawrence's, right? Like obviously he's not there. Yeah, it's going to be massive for them. But your third string offensive lineman that makes an extra, you know, $300 for, or whatever you said, $300 for doing an event. He does 10 of those through the season.
Sure. I mean, when they're talking about having $20 left in their wallet after they pay their bills for the semester, the extra $200 or $300 does make a difference, right? But not even every guy on the team will even have that opportunity for that amount of money. So I think my point is essentially, if we really want to help these athletes overall, which I'll tell you, I'm married to somebody that I watched struggle as a college athlete. Back when Eric played, you couldn't have Florida Bright Futures.
And Allie was loaded and didn't help him out at all. So
I paid some of Eric's bills in college. But back when Eric played, you couldn't have Florida Bright Futures and a athletic scholarship. Now you can. So that would have been a benefit to Eric because he had to choose. So he had his football scholarship. His parents made too much money for him to qualify for Pell Grant, but then also didn't give him money. So Eric had less money than anybody on his team that qualified for Pell Grant, whose parents didn't give him anything. And the way that the scholarship money was divvied out, it was like, do I pay rent or do I pay electric, water, and my cell phone bill? Like, there was never enough for what things actually cost. So if we're trying to help these athletes, a better way to do that would probably be to yearly look at what things cost in the city that these teams are in. Right now, they do it every 10 years. Think about the price that things have changed. Like, let's just look at rent. When my freshman year in college, it was $500 a room at the nicest apartment complex in Gainesville, right? So $1,500 total if it's a three-bedroom apartment.
Talking like 30-ish years ago?
Shut up. Not that long ago. By the time my brother was there 6 years after me, it was like $900 a room. And I don't even know what it is now because I don't but think about that jump, and there probably would have been no impact study over the course of me leaving and him getting there. And those are the things that we can do that can help these athletes. But nobody is talking about that. They're more concerned about this athlete having the ability to do a commercial for a car dealership, which I'm all for. I'm fine with it. But I just think it's silly that we act like this is going to make a huge impact across the board. It's going to make an impact to a big impact to a few, a minor impact to, let's say, a lot. And no impact to some guys on these teams when there are ways to impact all of them.
Yeah, I think this is to be fair though, this is like the easiest, this is the easiest one to do. Like I hate when you get older and you start like saying, you start saying things that like your parents used to say, like their little sayings and stuff. My stepdad always used to say, if it is to be, it's up to me. Right.
Yep.
And so essentially, what this is going to do is put it back on the players, right? And I think there are more ways that they should potentially be compensated. I don't disagree with that at all.
The generation that ate Tide Pods is in charge of their own savings.
If you if you're only getting paid $200 and you want to make X number, you need to do a billion events, right? Or you need to you need to do more or
demand
more.
Yeah, but you're the third string walk-on that they literally won't pay. Then what do?
You have to find a way to make yourself marketable, right? You have to, like FSU is putting in that Apex program that we talked about when it first came out that can benefit kids all over, right? We talked, there's an FSU women's soccer player that has, she's graduated, but has 1.5 million followers on Twitter. You know, and she, you know, played a non-revenue generating sport, right? Women's soccer and has a million and a half followers. It's on you to become marketable, right? Like I'm an absolute nobody and have 6,000 followers, right? Like, so figure out a way to up your social media impact, to become marketable, to, because if you had 20, you may be the third string walk-on, but if you can just get online and be funny and be marketable and you can get up to 20,000 followers, then they'll pay you for Instagram posts and this, that, and the other.
It's also interesting because there's lots of teams that have social media bans during the season for their players.
I mean, I can't imagine that.
So it'll be interesting that. To see how that
I can't imagine too is much affected. That holds up. And very few of them still. Like, who still has them? Like, you guys have them? We don't have them.
It depends on the season. It depends on the situation. If, you know, Florida loses and somebody talked smack to the media and the post-game conference, you better believe you're not going to see a player social media next week.
Dan Mullen's dumbass after everything he says after games better not be banning any players from social media.
That's my coach. I'm good with any Spurrierism that takes place.
Spurrier wasn't a jackass.
Are you Mullen. Kidding? Ask Tennessee. See what they think about that. I agree with that statement.
Yeah, Spurrier was talking crap about other players, other teams is what I meant. Not necessarily players specifically. Mullen just gets on TV and acts like a clown every time that he gets interviewed after any.
I don't think so.
So yeah, Mullen better not be banning anybody from sending out tweets. Well,
I'm just saying there will be some interesting consequences of this, and I'm here to watch it all.
Talked a little name, image, and likeness. We've been on here for about half an hour, so I don't want to go too much longer because shorter show. But talk to me about this 12-team proposed. It sounds like this is happening. 12-team playoff.
They're going to be voting on it, and if it passes.
It's going to pass. I can tell.
It's going to go into effect in 2023, so like soon, right? I am here for this. Eric and I have been fighting.
Yeah, you want your team to be able to make the playoff. I get it.
Eric and I have been fighting about this playoff since this was announced, right? He thinks it's terrible. And my brother thinks it's terrible too, which is also interesting. So we've been having all of these different discussions. My brother thinks it's terrible because he thinks that it's not a good idea to force these players to do anything else with their bodies, like to put any more strain on them. My thing is, if you're playing in your conference championship and you're playing in a bowl game, or you're playing in the first round of the playoffs, and then in the finals, we're literally talking about one more game, right? If your team makes the 4-team playoff, then if they make the 12-team playoff, because if they make the 4-team playoff, that probably means they're getting a bye for the 12-team playoff. So we're literally talking about one game. Eric's issue with it is the fact that the top four teams that get a bye all have to be conference champions. He has an issue with that because he says that it's ridiculous to think that, like, let's say the Pac-12 champion, Pac-10 champion who has, you know, three or four losses, something like that, would potentially get a bye over, let's say, a one-loss conference runner-up or something like that. He thinks that that doesn't make sense. And he thinks it's going to cause an issue if it's not just, okay, the top four teams, you get a bye. If they're ranked in different aspects and they get a bye. My thing is, I don't really care. As long as, if it's going to be as big as 12.
You just want a way for Florida to get in. And so this is your way to get your team.
Florida would have been in a 12-team playoff the last 3 years.
I understand that it's tough.
If it had existed.
I understand that it's tough that the college football playoff has existed for 7 years and you've never seen your team in it. I know that sucks. So I know you. I get why you're a fan. Like, you don't have to sell it to me. I understand.
I'm not a fan of it going to 12 teams, right?
But
if it does, I don't mind this model.
Right. So I liked the idea of 16 more, just because I feel
God, would we just let everybody in? What the hell?
Well, so here's where I'm at.
Regular season doesn't even matter.
It doesn't now anymore anyway. You know, like it just doesn't.
Well, now, I'll tell you what, the bowl season for sure doesn't matter outside of this now.
And it didn't last year, and it didn't the year before. And so that's why I think
I feel like it doesn't even less now.
Right. And that's why I was a fan of, you know, just make it 12 or 16. Because we will get more exciting bowl games. If you think if there's a 16-team playoff, a 16-team playoff means that there are 15 games, right? There's got to be 15 losers. So there's 15 games. That would essentially, well, like how many bowls are there? About 30. So last year.
87.
Last year in the 30 bowls that we had, legitimately like 25 of them sucked.
Last year was awful for bowl games.
Yeah. And it's good, and it would have kept getting worse because all these guys opt out, right? Like you got Florida with their best offense that they've ever had, and all their guys sit out. Like nobody played. It was terrible to see that, right? Like, and you'd think like, oh, well, they're going up against Oklahoma, another great offense, right? No, that game was terrible because Florida, I mean, you know, Trask had a rough game, I get it, but like Pitts was out, all these guys are not playing. That's that's crappy football. And so I like the idea of expanding the playoffs just so that...
So you think those guys all play if it's a playoff?
Yes, absolutely. Like you're trying to play to win. Now, if you're the 16 seed, maybe not. But I mean, I think they do play. Like if the game matters, I think you're going to see less opt-outs. To me, that's the biggest benefit.
Yeah.
All that said, the correct system was the BCS. Two teams. Four was a mistake because it would eventually lead.
Honestly, though, we kind of get like use the BCS system to get this, right?
No, I think the College Football Playoff Committee is asinine. I think that that's stupid and we should just go back.
I much prefer some sort of computer system that tells me versus
because Yeah, because 1 year game control matters. And then the next year conference championships matter. Sure. And then the next year your resume matters. And then the next year strength of schedule matters. And so like it's always changing with the BCS. Yes, it was always the same.
For me, the only saving grace is with 12 teams, it's Florida very difficult for me to argue that the 13th team belongs, right? So to Eric's point about it should just be the top four, not the top four college champions or conference champions, teams 5 through 12 get their shot, right? So if it was just to be in the playoffs, it's four teams and you have to be a conference champion, I would not be on board with that at all. But I do think there should be some reward for taking care of your own business. If you play, let's say, in the Big 12 or whatever, you can't help that the other teams in your conference aren't as good as maybe some of the other conferences, right? That's not something you have any control over. The only thing you can control is winning your schedule. So it's hard for me to, you know, be fully against the argument that they took care of business when there's other opportunities for those teams that maybe looked better or were ranked higher to also get it.
Yeah. See, I don't.
We're just talking about the bye. If we're talking about just straight up four teams, I'm not in favor of you having to win your conference to be in. I don't like the idea that a crappier Big 12 team gets in over a team from another conference who played a way harder schedule and is a better team, but has a loss. Like that's, I'm not cool with that. I am super pumped about how it screws Notre Dame. And I'm interested.
So what I'll
say
is there's no way that gets upheld. Like Notre Dame will, like they, if you don't think that college football, that the NCAA is going to bend over backwards to make every exception and everything else.
Do you think that Notre Dame will join the ACC though?
No,
I mean, why would you not just join the conference that you're in for every other sport? And it worked well last year.
Because of money. Like they don't want a revenue share. They want.
Yeah, well, you know, Notre Dame has a 0% chance Notre Dame wins 3 playoff games to get to become national champion. So you want to give yourself that little edge. Join a conference. You'll win the ACC every other year.
Here's what I think is crazy. I can't believe that you don't think the NCAA will bend over backwards to accommodate whatever Notre Dame wants. Like you truly believe right now that Notre Dame is never going to have
that they will try and benefit Notre Dame.
Yes.
That requires a tweak to the proposed plan, though. And if we're talking about the proposed plan, I love that it screws Notre Dame.
Well,
because I don't think you should get favoritism because you're not in a conference.
I mean, that's just never – I understand that, and I don't like Notre Dame either. I mean, I hope we beat their heads in week one. I'm just telling you, it's not, it's just not going to happen.
Well, I think it's an interesting point of discussion. And I think that if the NCAA wants them to join a conference, this is their way to force their hand.
Yeah, they won't do that. The NCAA is weak. They never make the right decisions. It's just not going to happen, unfortunately.
But, and I do like that there's no maximum number of teams from any particular conference that can get in.
Well, there's never been that. There's never been that.
There has. In the BCS, there was. Two teams could get in the BCS from your conference. You could not get in a third team.
That's not true at all. Yes, it is. In 2013, let me look it up for you. In 2012, I believe you guys had three or four teams in. 2012. You're talking about in BCS playoff games or like just BCS bowl games.
No, BCS bowl games, I believe is what it was.
Yeah. You guys played. Alabama obviously played and Texas A&M played that year.
But is that the year that they did the extra?
There were times that more happened, but I don't know. I don't know what's going to happen with the college football playoff games. But there's never been a limit. Like last year you could have as many, like if the top eight teams were all from the SEC, they'd have been the at-larges.
Right. It wasn't an issue for the playoffs, but it was for the BCS. I'm telling you, you could only have – look at this. I'm reading an article right now. Six SEC teams could have well found themselves in the top 12 by end of the season, but with the two-team per conference limit, that shuts out all of the rest of the teams. That was a BCS rule.
So when did Alabama and LSU play each other? 2009? Alabama, LSU, national champion. So you're telling me no more teams were in the BCS champion. That was 2012. So 2012. Yes, you guys went to a BCS bowl. Like that's just not even – I know you're reading that article.
But that's when they added the BCS championship game.
Well, then your article is outdated.
But I'm just saying that was a rule at one point. So I like that that's not incorporated
I mean, that was part of the BCS
model. That was part of the BCS model is that – So
it, this well, that was is, dumb. Yeah, it says that was dumb and they
the
fixed
four
it,
original know. BCS bowl contracts. You got to choose your conference champion that you had your tie in. And then there could be one other team for, cause there's a six automatic bids as conference champion. Then there were four at large bids and each conference could only have two total teams. Right. In it.
Well, that got changed. That obviously got changed.
I understand that. But my point is they could have done that in this and I would not have been a fan. I think it's good that it could be. And I think that there's literally, if you look at last year, there probably would have been five SEC teams in it.
Well, thank God. Thank God there
were. And I know everyone that's not an SEC fan is going to say like.
Thank God there wasn't because half of them wouldn't have played their players like you guys.
Well, hopefully our players would have played if it was a playoff. But, who knows? But I think that it's good. Because at the end of the day, everybody should want the best teams there, right? Regardless if that means that there's a lot of one conference. And I hope that I would feel this way whether or not my conference was the dominant conference in college football, because we should want to see the best matchups on the field, not the best matchups within whatever, rules we place on these teams. If we're going to do this, let's do it, right? Let's do it the right way. Let's make sure we're actually seeing the best teams in this playoff.
So this,
if we're going to make all bowls meaningless, it needs to count.
I mean, they already are. And so, like, I don't think the playoff is changing
anything.
This
makes it even worse, in my opinion. You will see way more opt-outs after this. You will see attendance drop in all of these other bowl games.
I don't think you're going to see that many more opt-outs because how many opt-outs – okay, so you've got 12 playoff teams, right? The 20th ranked teams in lower, like your Coastal Carolinas and your Liberties from, like, I'm trying to think of the teams this year. Those guys, nobody was opting out of those games. So like your 20th to 40th ranked teams that are playing in the lower level bowls, those guys aren't going first, second round, So I think you'll see some opt-outs, but I don't think it's going to be much different. I think you're going to see less opt-outs overall. Like if we looked right now at the final rankings, college football rankings from 2021, your top 12 ended with Alabama, Clemson, Ohio State, Notre Dame, Texas A&M, Oklahoma, Florida, Cincinnati, Georgia, Iowa State, Indiana. Like your bottom 12, your bottom teams from there, Louisiana Lafayette, San Jose State, NC State, Tulsa, BYU, guys aren't opting out from there, you know, Northwestern, I mean, Coast, I Liberty. Don't know.
I just I think that this makes, you know, them who, even less meaningful.
It takes, I mean, they were absolutely, this was the worst bowl season. Last year was the worst bowl season that we've ever
agreed seen. But I also and think they, that there were a something. Lot of
20
factors
this year coming up. No, I'm telling you, with name, images, likeness, everything else, this next year coming up is going to be worse. COVID or no COVID, this next bowl season is going to be even worse, because the standard has been set that when you finish your season, if you're not competing for a championship, you opt out. And that's just what's going
to
happen.
Well, and that's the thing, is like, that it used to be looked at as quitting on your team, and now it's not, seen as it's not, acceptable.
Right. And I see both sides of that. I see the side of that that wants my players to play and wants, but if I was in the same situation and I was risking millions of dollars, I probably would do it too. You know, like I understand it. I think there's so much more money in it now than there was 15 years ago. So I'll tell you this, Florida State could have an unbelievable year by their standards, right? Coming off a 3-win season. And Milton could be really, really good. Best quarterback in the state. And he's opting out, right? Like when we go, if we go 8-4, right? Like, which would blow minds. He's opting out. Like, there's no way he's playing in that meaningless bowl game. And he shouldn't. Like, coming off a major, like, he should go get paid, you know? Like, hey, you did your work. You came and you saw and conquered. But Florida State somehow went 9-3, 10-2, made a 16-game or a 12-game playoff, or 9-2, 10-2, something like that. He would play. Like, there's no doubt he would play. And that's, I think that's what you're going to see, is now that more teams are in and can play, their guys aren't going to opt out.
Right.
You know, and then, like you said, all those bottom tier teams anyway. I mean, who's opting out from Louisiana Lafayette? Who's opting out from Tulsa?
I would like to see. I honestly don't know off the top of my head the stats of who opted out from those smaller teams, but I would be interested in knowing. I do think the teams that make the playoffs, it makes your players more likely to stick around and play, which they should. You know, one of the things I just thought about from the Notre Dame standpoint is, because they don't have a conference championship, in theory, they do get a bye in the playoffs, right? Because they're not playing in the conference championship, but that just makes them have to play an extra game. Which, so I guess, I mean, I don't see, there's no way Notre Dame wins three games against, you know, the top 12, top 11 teams in the country and wins. So I'm not actually concerned about it.
I mean, you could probably say that for just about everybody but Ohio State, Clemson, and Alabama.
Potentially. You know, it's going to be a gauntlet. The funny thing is that we're doing all of this crap just for Alabama to win again.
Yeah.
Like, which is kind of amusing, but I'm here for this. If we're going to do it, let's do it right. I think that 4 is an okay number. I'm not a big fan of expanding, but if we're here, we're here.
I think 4 sucks. Let's go ahead and do it. 4 sucked too, because 4 is the reason we have this now.
I mean, I think BCS was the way to go, but we can't go backwards, right?
So oh, no.
It'll eventually, this is what we're doing.
It'll eventually
and, you know, better. Some of these things, Eric and I went back over the last few years to look to see who would have played who and what would have been the way that things worked out. UCF would have played Alabama first round the year that they said that they were national champions, which, like, way to get exactly what you said you wanted, and it would not have been a good outcome at all. Some of the matchups would have been really cool. I'm pretty sure it was either this year or last year Florida would have played Baylor, which would have been an interesting game. There just would have been some fun matchups that we don't ever see. And from that aspect, that's cool.
And this, so you will agree, though, that this has completely rendered the regular season meaningless, right?
Yeah, which I hate. Yeah, because that was the problem. That was the thing about college football that is,
because you,
that's why I'm against the playoff in general, though. Right. That's why I like the BCS system, because I like that every game matters.
You made a statement earlier that a team that handles their business and does what they need to, you know, blah, 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 should get in over this, you know, over this team that maybe just won their conference that was down. What I will say about, you know, Eric's argument and thoughts on that, if it is 4 conference champions and you have an 8-5 Pac-12 team that wins it, like, they're going to give it to the other 4 conference champions. Like, I'm not
for
that
sure
worried about that.
No,
and
they
I've never.
Which also kind of makes it even more arbitrary, though, right? Well, like, in favor of his argument, if only 4 of 5 get it, no matter what, no matter who the conference champions are, it kind of makes it a little weird that it is a conference champion as a precursor.
Well, you're going to have Notre Dame added to that. And then, you know, for what it's worth, you're also, I don't think it has to be a Power 5 conference. I think it can just be
it any. It does. No, it has to be a Power 5 conference
to get a bye.
So
a group of 5 can never get a bye, is correct. The way it's written.
is the way that it's written.
See, that, to me, that's kind of weird. I think that they should qualify for it. Not that I think it would all be kind of judgment based, but you know, if Cincinnati runs the table and is sitting at like sixth in the country, and your options are a 10-2 Oklahoma, or like you said, an 8-5 Pac-12 team, then I think Cincinnati should get it. You know, I think you would reserve that for teams like Boise and Cincinnati and UCF that are there year after year after year. But I mean, I think you should have that option. I mean, why not?
Sure.
But
and when I want to clarify when I said that I think that, you know, if you take care of business, I'm meaning that for this bye. That is not my argument if we're only talking about four teams. I do understand only being able to play the teams in front of you, but I also want to see the best game possible. And if you took care of business, but you are not one of the top four teams in the country, I'm sorry for you, but I don't want to see you in a playoff game.
Well, I'm
if my option is to have four teams there.
Yeah,
but if so it's 12,
based on that, yeah,
I'm okay with it.
Well, and to me, I'm not, because you said I want to see teams take care of their business, and you're going to have some four lost teams in this 12 game playoff, right?
Sure,
and that's asinine. Sure. Like, that's not taking care of business, you know, at all, you know. And so,
but it's the way your conference is designed. I will be interested to see if they get rid of divisions in conferences going forward, because sometimes your conference champion is essentially gifted that title because of the way the divisions are set up and played out that year. It's not necessarily even the very best team in their conference, right? So
in their
I'll be interested in their, like, if you, like, let's say, so Alabama and LSU are in the same conference. Let's pretend it's 2008 or 2009 or 10 or whatever. And LSU and Alabama are probably the two best teams in the country, but they play in the same division. So one of them will be left out going to the conference championship, even with the opportunity to play in the conference champion, even if they're the two best teams in the entire country, right? So
I think that's just college football. I mean, that's the way it's always been.
Florida State, there's no parity in the way that we do conference champions. Not everybody has divisions. Some conferences you play everybody.
I mean, that's your conference's that's your conference's decision.
So
right?
That's what but that's why I'm wondering if this will go away.
No, I don't think so.
I don't know. It'd be interesting
to watch.
There's
too many rivalries that would be eliminated by it.
You don't have to change the schedules at all, right? You just have to have the two best teams end up in the conference championship. And
I think
so I don't know. I'll be interested to see if there'll be more of a push.
Is there talk about
sure
that?
No, just me. I don't know.
Okay.
I don't know if there's talk about that. I'm just interested to see if it's something that will be discussed moving forward, because that is a handicap in some conferences if two of your best teams are in the same division. Not everybody's the ACC.
Listen, and yeah, this is
who they thought were going to be the two best teams on opposite edges of the conference.
This is not me talking smack, but this is completely me talking smack. I think you guys need to hope that doesn't happen. I think
I
think that would be bad for Florida. Right now, Florida has to beat Georgia. Like, that's all you have to do to make the SEC championship. You just need to either be better, get lucky, get some breaks, whatever. All you got to do is beat Georgia every year.
Right.
I have a hard time seeing Florida be the second best team in the conference more often than just them beating Georgia, right? Like, so I think that'd be a bad thing for UF. I think that'd be a good thing for A&M. I think that'd be a good thing for anybody in the West, because it's a lot easier to just be second to Alabama than it is to do anything else, right?
So yeah, I mean,
because
it's
Florida,
all very interesting.
Florida is competing right now for a trip to Atlanta every year, just beat Georgia. If you're competing for second in the SEC, you are now competing with Georgia, A&M, Auburn, and LSU. And then just everybody else that's like kind of good here and there, you know, like
this team
looks into it. So yeah, I think that'd be a bad thing for Florida. So I think long-term that'd be a great thing for FSU, because we're in the division with Clemson. Like for actually every year since 2008.
I think that would be so good for Texas A&M, for LSU, for Wisconsin. Yeah. I mean, there is teams that it would be really good at.
Every year for the last 10 years, the winner of the Florida, it might be a couple more. It might be 2009. Every year for the last 10 or 11 years, the team that has won Florida State Clemson has won the ACC that year, right? And obviously gone to the championship. And obviously we're nowhere near them now, but I mean, that'd be a great thing for FSU because eventually, assuming they get back, I mean, Florida State being second in the ACC is not that difficult. Like, who's the second best team in the ACC, right? It's different every year. Like, who knows?
Right? For sure.
I think that would benefit Florida State. So maybe we do need to.
Okay, so I can't read it, but I just Googled because I'm not a member of the Atlantic, but they have a article up there right now that says, when new college football playoff format starts, will divisions be harmful? But I can't read it because I'm not subscribed to it.
Send it to me. I am. It's like $1 a month. What do you, come on, like pay for this. We're in June 30th, 3 years before this is going to go into effect, 2 years before this is going to go into effect, 2.5 years, I guess. And obviously very passionate about this. So I'm excited for when I'm excited for it to all kind of go down and happen.
Hey, yeah, excited to watch how it plays out.
I want to say we're only like 9 weeks away from football.
I know. It's so close. I'm so excited. July 5th is when fall decorations go up in the Wilbur household. We have all of our 4th of July stuff out right now. We're actually going to Disney the 5th and 6th, so I guess the 7th.
Oh, thanks for the
fall
invite.
Decorations will come out. We're actually going with Eric's, one of his best friends from college, played football with him, Chris Hetland, and his wife and kids. I'm excited about it, but we're going to see the new fireworks because they're back.
Oh, by Staples. Tomorrow. No, this is by Andy.
Yes, article. I know, but I can't read it.
I'll read it and give you the cliff notes why I think it's bad for you.
I mean, it might be bad for UF. I just think it's a conversation that's going to be happening. I'm not saying it's good for UF. I just think it'll be something that will be discussed.
Yeah. I don't know if the conferences see, I guess that'd be the interesting part, and I'll read this and we'll talk about it, but I wonder if the conferences care, right? Cause they're sending two people
as many as they want. Yeah. It depends on the conference, right?
Well, I just don't know that eliminating conferences changes how many I don't know that eliminating divisions would change how many teams get in. No, but does it
get your best teams there in the right order?
I mean, I think so. And here's the example. I know we're wrapping it up and we got to go. I think so because say Florida and Alabama were going last year those would have still, like in the final college football playoff rankings, those would have still been the top two. Oh, no. It would have gotten the best two teams there. A&M finished ahead of Florida by virtue of that loss that Florida took. And so if Florida would have won, Florida and Alabama would have been the first two teams to go. And if not, A&M and Alabama would have been the first. So I think so. I think by virtue of playing that game, it does. Because
it's not a formula, though, is what makes it difficult. These are all people sitting around in a room discussing. And so you could say, okay, so who's the better team in December? Is it the same team that was the best team in September? You know what I mean? Like I would agree with you more if it was a formula.
Yeah, but I mean, with the committee, I mean, that's just never going to be possible. But I do think
with the BCS formula, which would make the most sense in my mind to seat this 12-team playoff by using that, by using something that isn't subjective. But here we are with a committee, you know.
Which is stupid. But I think we all knew Florida played well in the second half of that SEC championship game, but I think we all knew that.
I don't know that you watched that SEC championship game as a member of the playoff committee and then put A&M in over them.
I mean, if you watch the first half, you might, but you also aren't.
No one played Alabama closer the entire season, and it depends. Does the committee look at what have you done for me lately? Or the whole thing. And every year it's different. So we don't even know. Yeah, we don't know what they look at.
I'm fairly confident that they would not have put an 8-3 team in over a 9-1. But I agree Florida played them closer. I know that that's something that they're working on the banner right now for that.
Shut up. No, my point is just formula, I think A&M is in. I think that that's not necessarily the case.
I think it's like 90%. Last year, the way it went down, I know that you wear the
surprise, surprise.
I know that you wear the orange and gold or the orange and blue glasses, but I think they also would look at the fact that Florida lost that game by 6, but they got the ball back with 2 minutes. And then Alabama just kind of played prevent defense because they knew they were up 2 scores. I mean, I think if you're going to really get meticulous about it, yes, Florida did score late to make it appear closer than it was. But Florida never had the
ball. You watched that game with me. That was a close game. That was a nail biting game.
Florida never had the ball with a chance to win until there were like 15 seconds left and they had like 80 yards to go and no timeout. So, I mean, it was fun. It was competitive. There was a lot of points, but I don't think Alabama was ever nervous about losing the game, right? Like Alabama never was on defense with a chance to lose, right? I know Florida scored late to make it look closer than it was, but it was a 14-point game with 5 minutes to go, right? And Alabama backed it off and Florida scored. Credit to them. Great job. Made it look closer. But I don't think anybody ever really thought Alabama was never in danger of losing the game. Florida never took the lead. It never, you know, like I don't know. So, yeah, no, I've got A&M in over you guys. Sorry.
Well,
I got him in over surprise. You guys this year too.
Right. Which is kind of my point in this whole conversation. We knew where you stood on this before the game happened. But I digress. Let's wrap it up. We'll pick this up another week because we have a
hopefully
few weeks to
discuss not
it before.
A 3 week break between.
No, we won't. No more 3 week breaks. I don't have any more vacations except for my little 2 day stay at Disney the rest of the summer. I'll be here.
Scott and us we're going with Scott to Disney the next week. So I hope you're jealous.
Okay.
All right, cool. Thanks so much for hanging out and listening. Thanks for listening through our rant and fight tonight. We appreciate you guys for joining us and giving us some slack on this break that we took. So we'll talk to you guys next week, hopefully next week. Until then, I don't really have a closing line there. Until then, go Noles.